Good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
Good evening, everyone. It is 7 o'clock. It's Wednesday night. And where are we? We're at the beginnings of our travels through the book called The Invocation of Presence by E.J. Gold. It's a curious volume. It's kind of like has sat on the side of the offerings for all these years of HBM, Practical Work on Self, the ABD suite that he's offered. And then there was this. And as we were going through the ABD guidebook, which was our last book, we decided that we needed to have something to help us understand the concept of two concepts that are very closely related. One is sensing, and the other one is presence. And part of the reason is that if you read the introduction, which is Key to Life, you start to see maybe you need to know something about that, because on your deathbed, it's a way to be ready, but it's also a way to be ready and present yourself to life in any event. So anyway, we're on the fourth week now here, Pat, and
yes,
we've made it this far. And we've, after all of our toils and struggles, we've made it to chapter one.
Yay!
We're at the very beginning
Page
of chapter one.
Chapter one.
And the first part, the title of this is The Emotion of Presence and Memory. And actually, you know what? I didn't bring my Spanish translation, which I do have.
Oh.
I'll bring it next week.
Nice.
And I'll read from that, so that our Spaniards can get some of that. But the meaning of the title will be something that Judy will unveil to us as the class goes on. Right, Judy?
Sure.
There you go. She's sure of it.
Thank you, Judy.
I like that. So what we've done so far is all of this is...
Can we go back, though, Dave, to the second page of the...
oh, my God!
On the prologue, just to go over something that's pertinent to this?
I was on a roll here, Judy.
Oh, okay. Keep rolling.
Okay, we'll come back to it.
I told you.
Yeah, well, you... Pat called that last week anyway, that had to be addressed, okay, and you're so right. Well, if we have her on the PA, then we can't.
Use
the phones don't work.
Judy, is there any way you could get closer to your microphone or turn off your background sound, or we could pop the volume up because we want to hear you better on the recording?
Can you hear me now?
That's a little better.
Yeah.
That'll do it.
Okay.
Thank you.
So that's going to be an attention exercise to make sure that your volume is just right.
My volume is completely off on my computer. This is the phone. I can't have both on because they're not in sync.
So we're depending on you for the modulation of your decibels, okay? Anyway, so chapter one, we've been through the introduction and the preface, and we've been through the prologue, which we have a lot of material to cover on the prologue, which has to be unveiled, and that's what Pat and Judy were referring to a few minutes ago. But we're going to enter into chapter one because there's a lot of work to do, and chapter one is just fascinating. I find it fascinating, Ivan, not just what he's saying, but how he's presenting the material. It's a literary
tour de force.
It's just superb, tour de force. And
you know what this is, David? I just have to say, you know, this is the Black Stallion in full heat. That's what this is. This chapter one for David is the Black Stallion in full heat, ready to go.
You bet.
And we have been patiently holding David back for 4 weeks, and none of us are going to be able to hold him back any longer. So you just feel free.
Thank you.
To, you know, lurch through those gates and start down the track. Make you forget what you were going to say.
No, it didn't. It just, but it made me remember about about horses that are black horses.
You may not want to go there.
There's a whole theory about that, which I'm not going to go there tonight. Okay.
Hold him to that.
Anyway, I'll get to it later, though.
Okay.
It's actually very interesting.
Okay.
But, so what is EJ saying, the first opening salvos of this chapter? And I don't want to really read the whole sentences. We really need to do some work on our own and read some of this material yourself when you get a chance.
Just,
but we're going to go ahead.
Just that first one. Come on. I will put my mic a little closer. When I turn my head, I got to get the mic right over here and move the mic and get myself more better.
Okay.
Okay.
Let's read the first two paragraphs, and then we're going to start jumping around a bit.
That's
okay,
fine.
Ivan?
Yes.
All right. So why don't you get us started?
Chapter 1, Emotion, a Presence and Memory. If we could examine with our ordinary attention the entire content of our memories as a single, living, breathing wholeness, we would discover, to our surprise, that we really have very little detailed memory. Although we were supposedly present during all those past events which form the whole of our experience in organic life. G began speaking to a small number of his drones or kitchen helpers during the afternoon preparation of the evening meal.
Ivan, please.
Categorizing them with the full force of our attention, he continued, we may be able to notice that, unlike the majority of our memories, a few memories are extremely vivid, almost as tangible and immediate as our present organic experience, and that these few unusually vivid memories from our otherwise completely forgettable past seem to include impressions of many categorical varieties from several and perhaps all centrums.
Curious. So he's indicated to us that there's two. Well, let me ask you a question real quick here. So last Thursday, what were you doing Thursday in the afternoon?
I know exactly.
There's two people that know.
I know what I was doing Thursday.
I know what I was doing Thursday.
Tidal wave here.
Four.
So, in what level of detail do you recall such an event? Harry?
Different spots within that afternoon. I remember I was driving out to the ranch. I got out there, and I sat out on the porch and looked at my fig tree. And it's my favorite place to sit and meditate, so it's an alive place. So I remember looking up and seeing the blue sky behind the trees and going through my prayer.
Okay, so you remember,
I remember that very vividly.
Quiet space,
yes.
Looking at the blue sky, right?
And I remember walking through the HEB in Dripping Springs buying groceries for the trip. And I often have vivid memories from walking around in grocery stores. I have no idea why.
That's for another conversation about Bardo Station. it's a specific Bardo Station, too. Okay. And
with they're alive places. I mean, there's lots of food, lots of energy and prana in the air. So it's easier to get into a state of it. And for some reason, I remember to remind myself to be mindful while
is.
I'm there.
Okay. So I'm mindful when I'm there, is he's telling us. So let's just focus on exactly what he's saying here, though, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where he's saying we have a generalized sense of memories most of the time that we just forget this stuff. And then we have these other things. Unlike the majority of our memories, a few memories are extremely vivid, almost as tangible and as immediate. And what is that all about? First of all, have you had that?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Without hesitation.
I can go there right now. I'm there right now.
Have you had this? A vivid memory. Absolutely vivid. And you can recall. Marvette.
Yes.
No question. Dan. Yes, he says. Ivan.
Just even from last Thursday, yes.
Even from last Thursday. That was the whole thing, is that you never know on that Thursday what happened. So it could have been that day, too.
Yeah.
So let's get an example of a couple of these that we're designating as vivid memories. Okay? Do you want to?
I would love
start?
To.
Let's keep it brief.
Okay, I'm going
to
do tactile.
To the extent you can.
Tactile, location, and sensitivity. It's 1968, Western Illinois. I'm on Christmas break. I go to the Mississippi River, and I put my feet in the water of the Mississippi while there is snow on the ground. And I'm 19.
Age.
And everything about that, I can smell, I can see the air. I know it wasn't that cold. It was just like a moment, and it held its own momentness for me as long as I was there, and I carry that. It's still with me. I'm right there right now. Got my feet in the water on the banks of the Mississippi.
So there's an example. This was a few years ago.
Just a few years ago.
And yet it's
a little bit younger.
Somehow it's tangible right now.
Yes.
Right?
And tactile. I can feel it, I can smell it, I can see it. It's like still alive. I'm still alive in that moment, and it is still alive with me.
When we hear Pat speak in such a way, what is your sensing of her veracity? Do you believe that?
Yes, I do.
Does it ring?
Yes.
Sounds congruent to me.
Why does it ring? What do you mean, yes? You don't have a phone.
Oh, they need a phone. Hand them a phone.
Would you like to try to answer?
Yeah.
Yeah. There's some answers.
There's an answer right
yes,
there.
Yes,
let's have these guys answer.
Yeah. Can you repeat the question?
The question is that when Pat was sharing, did you feel that it was true? She's nodding her head. Did it feel true to you? And then my question is, why? What is it in you? Okay?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
The confidence with which she said every detail of the memory and that she is still alive in that, that makes me believe that she really is. Yeah.
Still alive in that. What
yeah.
that means, right? Whatever that means. Okay. So what we're doing, and thank you. Judy, do you want to take a swing at the ball?
With a memory?
Yeah, a vivid memory.
Sure. I'm a little over 2 years old, and I have a jar.
Can't a little bit closer to the phone.
I'm about 2 years old, a little bit more maybe, and I have a jar, a large jar, and I have just caught a monarch butterfly. And I run up the steps of the bungalow that we're renting in the Catskills for the summer, and I hold up this jar with my prize butterfly, all excited to show it to my mother, who's holding a newborn baby boy, my brother. And I say, look, and my mother says, if you keep it in the jar, it will die. And that was my first encounter with the concept of die, and I'm this two-year-old in shock. That's the memory.
That's a good one, lady.
Judy's an adult. So 2 years was quite a while ago as well.
A couple of moons ago.
And listen to that, right? How alive that was.
Mm.
Who else wants to take a shot at? Now, if you're on the chat, you have two choices. One, you could go to the Invocation of Presence Facebook page and type in your commentary, and you're going to see, Bernice Platt?
Platt. Mm-hmm.
What a sharing that was. Just fabulous when he's 12 years old. Or you can call in and share it. It's a little difficult, I think, to type it into this particular chat. But that was my thought. Did you want to take
a
swing at it? Okay, here we go. Who are you?
Nishit.
Visiting the last two voices that you heard that had that accent, they're from India, all the way.
Hi, welcome.
Welcome.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And they're visiting, it's lovely, and they're just wonderful to be here. Anyway. Please.
Yeah, so the year was 2013, and it was September, and I came out of the airport with my bags. I landed in Vancouver, and I can still remember this fragrance, the smell of that place, and the cars were moving, and a man comes to me, and he says, are you a Gujarati? I said, yeah, I am. How come you know? Because he said, I'm also a Gujarati. Who be Gujarati shu? So I was so glad to know that. And I still, we were waiting for the guests to take us to their home. Then the car comes. I sit in the car and I'm watching all the roads of the Vancouver for the very first time. So this is very much present.
With you.
Fabulous.
Yeah. Now here's an interesting thing.
Now there's sound there.
This is another
sense. I mean, Judy mentioned it in hers also, but it was more visual, and mine was the feel. You have just mentioned sound. Someone said that to you.
Right.
And you also had the smell, but they said that to you, and that's what clinked it in for me. I had that picture when you mentioned that, the word, the name that he said to you, that brought it full up.
And once again, he was in an airport, which is a classical BARTO station. And we're in transit by necessity. By necessity, we're in transit when we're there.
He said he's so much attracted to airports. Yes.
Okay.
May I? Oh, you've got one. Oh, good.
Ben.
Thank you.
I still have the posture in my body. I'm sitting on top of the bottom of a big, like, PA speaker, really big, in the middle of the freeway, in the middle of the night. It's dark, the street lights. We're in the freeway of Denver. I don't know where, because I've just been in a serious car accident, and I don't know where I am. I didn't know I was in shock, but I was. And I'm holding myself up with my arms behind me. I'm sitting up. I don't remember how I got there. And I'm I kind of know the car is behind me upside down.
Hmm.
I don't know where the person was, my passenger I was driving. I don't know where he is. And I'm looking up at the streetlights, and they're kind of streaking down. And there's no cars. I don't know why, but it's the middle of the freeway, and it's and there's like four lanes, and they're all empty. And somebody walks up to me, this guy, and he says, "Are you all right?" And I said, "Oh, yeah, I think so." And he said, "Well, I think we're going to take you in the ambulance." And so then I don't really have a strong memory of going into the ambulance or anything. I just really have the memory of being there at that time.
Wow.
When was this?
1971.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Oof. The streetlights really laid in that scene for me. That just, you know, it was a little murky while you were describing, and I could see you, but I couldn't see you in the place. Then you mentioned that, and it came in nice and clear.
Yeah, They showed the scene.
Cement.
No cars.
I don't know where they were. Yeah. Yeah.
Harry, did you have something else you wanted to say?
Well, just a few things. I have discovered that the moments I remember in the past seem to be characterized by either great danger, great belonging, a sense of belonging, or a great sense of connection with something higher, something where its presentational immediacy is so overwhelming that it's more real than the usual standards by which we judge such things. Like the evening we did Casiel in 2014 when we were doing our work with angels with everyone. That was quite an experience.
That he's referring to when we did the hidden work 3 years
correct.
Ago or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, the last chapter of it.
Small angelic groups to give presentations.
Yeah.
Do we remember how that went?
I remember that particular invocation because it stands out. It kind of blotted out a lot of other things on either side of it after I had it. But I can access it at any time in full color and whatever in sound. And actually, it was silent.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I remember the
I remember you having very little to say afterward, David, saying, "Well, I guess that spoke for itself, and we'll see you next week." I've also had great
saying I remember those presentations as being very vivid, also very powerful.
Yes. Of all the things we've done, were more vivid for me.
Yeah.
Say that again, please, Harry.
Of all the things that we have done together for the last 7 or 8 years, that is the most vivid, those angelic invocations.
And there are reasons for this that we'll understand as we go through the chapter, very specific reasons. I'll share one.
Yes.
And I've shared it before, and I'm sharing this because I shared it before.
Okay.
All right? I was about 9 years old, and my sister and I, she was a year older than I, we were attending Catholic school. And for some reason, my parents had brought us to the parish where the church and the school were joined together. And they were having a conference with our teachers, which we weren't able to attend, so they said to us, go to the church, so they actually took us to the church and asked us to wait there. So this is an unusual thing. This is like, I don't know, let's say it was 10 in the morning, and there's no one there. There's no, the mass is done, the morning mass is done, there's no, the cleanup of the church, so it was utterly empty. And they said, just those sit down in one of the pews. So this, you know, Catholic churches, they're these big, immense things, right? And here were these little kids. And so we went into the pew, and we sat down in the, let's say, the middle section of the middle section.
Mm-hmm.
And before us was this beautiful crucifix. And the light was, it wasn't, the lights weren't on, it wasn't, it was just this shadow of wasn't dark, but there was the hints of everything, and you could see the window, you know, the light was filtering in through the windows and things like that, and we were sitting there mostly afraid, and we're just sitting there kind of, we didn't know what to do, but we're kind of in awe of the space, and then for some reason I noticed that maybe 10 pews ahead of us, there was a man there praying, quietly praying to himself. And he was praying, and you could feel the power of his prayer. And he's sitting there quietly praying. And then at one moment, he looks up in the midst of his prayer, and his arms just fly out in respect for the Godhead in front of him. And that's when I learned devotion.
Wow.
9 years old. I almost became a priest.
What do you mean almost?
I almost became a priest.
What do you mean almost?
I was going to put a little thing on, okay? Backwards caller.
Jeez, we have to get a thing clear for you, man. Corona.
So,
Mr. Franco.
Yes, ma'am.
As a memory,
great.
Is there any difference for you when you say that memory now? Do you experience the memory in the same way that you experienced the event?
Actually, there's one thing that's different.
Okay, good.
And that's that my sister has died since then.
Right.
So her presence in my memory is different. It's not less power, it's different. It's more ethereal.
Good.
I can barely see her when I...
When you call it up.
I call it up. But the power of the emotion I had when this man revealed his devotion to me is unparalleled today. I access that point.
Mm-hmm.
It's an access point for me,
mm-hmm,
when I seek to enter into the space of devotion. Interesting, huh?
Yeah. You have created a gateway, and it has within itself created for you the energy for you to access the gateway. That's the power of the memory. You can go with the memory to the place, and the place of the memory will power you to be able to go there. And with that little note, if I may, there was a memory that occurred for me that I did not know that I had.
Interesting.
And the reason I didn't know that I had it is because it's not from this lifetime. I was in Spain. I was with our Spanish brothers and sisters group in Ibiza, and they took me to a place that had been a fortress during the time when there were the medieval era and there were knights and wars between crusaders, etc. And that particular island was one of the few places in the Mediterranean that did not have war on it. That's one of the things about that particular island, Ibiza. And we walked up the cobblestones and we were looking at everything, you know, blah, 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 and we came around a corner, and the spot there was one of my spots, and I just fell apart like I am right now, because the impact of that event is still present, even though this is not the body that I had when that occurred. And that's what I'm saying about the memory carries the energy for access
right.
to the memory, and the energy from the memory will give you access to it so that you can use that doorway. So this is a choice, and I think that's one of the parts
yep.
about
mm-hmm.
this chapter, is that you are actually given the capacity, the ability. For some reason, the human has the ability to draw upon these vivid memories. And
to
that's
time travel. To time travel.
Correct.
You actually do.
Correct.
Like when Judy was talking about the two-year-old girl,
yeah.
she was totally vivid to me in terms of an access point. And it helped me access that point when she was sharing. I was in the airport with you when you were sharing. I've never been to Vancouver, but I've been to that airport. Okay? In essence, I've been to that airport, and I sat in a auto accident aftermath, and you had another story about such an auto accident many years later.
Yeah, I
did
that in a previous class.
Yeah, you did. And these are so first of all, we've heard a little bit from some of the individuals that have shared what it felt like to share it, and Pat helped us explain what some of that mechanism was, right? Now, go ahead, Harry.
David, if I might just add something I think is worthy of mention. The energy of our group itself has an evocative power that makes recollection of these momentous events in our life more easily accessed. And I notice that I can now actually step into all of these experiences that have just been shared by people much more deeply than I could if I were sitting by myself. And
right.
my own memories and recollections are much richer now. And I think it's the contributing factor of this group entity. There's an energy within it that gives tremendous carry-through and carry-over power.
So let's see if we understand what Harry's telling us.
I don't know how to articulate it.
In this is a group. Dan, is there anybody online right now? Yes. Yeah. How many people? There's 14 people online, and there's
eight
other number of people here, and that in itself is there's another element of invocation that occurs there. There's the individual invocation when you're in an airport or you've been catapulted into a different state of consciousness by an accident or the utter joy of discovery of a butterfly and these other things. Those things we individually are, but we as a group also have woven a entity, an ability for an entity to come in that allows us to be here in a particular manner that allows us more access to more of those spaces. And if you're like me right now, you're running through some of these things right now. I am, you know, like
yeah.
all many of them that have occurred.
Nicely said, David. That's exactly it.
Now, do we have a hint yet, Judy, why the darn chapter is named Emotion of Presence and Memory? I thought emotion was like this whole reactive thing. When I go to HBM, it says we don't have emotion.
Can I comment on that?
Here's somebody
in
that gets...
In relation to what Judy, your
Wait a minute. Somebody has an answer, so you and I might be off the hook, okay?
I'm not saying I have an answer to that question, but specifically related to Judy's memory, without her saying an emotion, her recollection evoked very strongly the emotion of a two-year-old.
Yeah.
Being delighted at the skill of catching a butterfly. I mean, oh my God, at two? That's exciting.
Yeah.
And she, without really talking about emotion, portrayed all that in her bringing down that space for all of us. And then the shock, because it's like diametrically opposed, one emotion to the other, death. At 2 years old, I don't think I contemplated death. And so that's a real strong emotional dichotomy there, which she effectively communicated. So I think that there's something to this title, that emotion is definitely part of the whole picture.
And she was able to hear that dichotomy. She was an individual that at that age not only heard it, but was catapulted into another level of understanding that we get to share, we hear about a few years later.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I certainly saw this young two-year-old running up those stairs with great power. But isn't it a different kind of emotion that...
Yeah, you want me to comment on that, Dave?
Yeah, what are we talking about here?
Okay, well, we're talking about the intake of impressions, okay? And impressions... what comes in from the outside filters through six organs, and we don't usually think about the six organs, and I'm not talking about, you know, the third eye, which kind of puts it all together, but in Buddhism, okay, there are six organs, your eye, the ear and sound, the nose and odor, the tongue and taste, the body and touch, the mind and mental objects, and mental objects, something that Gurdjieff refers to as form, images, okay? And when we're bringing these memories up, it's bringing us into a moment where we were present and we were, as that two-year-old, seeing, hearing my mother's voice. There wasn't odor involved, but feeling the excitement in my body, and then this mind, this concept, death. I knew it wasn't a good thing. I didn't know too much about it. So it's intake, these intake organs that we have where our perception is very, very one-focused. And if we go back to the second page of the prologue where he says, it only seems to appear at the worst possible time. Yes.
Which paragraph?
It only seems to appear. About the top third of the page.
That would be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, the sixth paragraph from the top of the of page 2 of the prologue.
Right. So think of these stories you hear of like there's an accident and somebody lifts a car, a 2,000-pound car. Or...
Right.
You know, I can think of an incident where I was in trouble above the tree line in Vermont and a storm was coming and how I actually flew down the mountain. What I did was impossible, physically impossible. The memory of that is so powerful, where it is an effort that's effortless. It's an action that's effortless because all the centers, physical, mental, emotional, everything is focused in one-pointedness.
Everything is focused in one-pointedness.
Very nice.
This is the gem that Judy's trying to talk to us about. Suddenly, all the centrums come together for whatever reason, even at the age of two. And I've talked to individuals who can reflect on their birth event and have evidence of what happened during that moment. But let's jump ahead one paragraph here to the end of that, on the
Oh, you're back on page one of the chapter
one. I'm back on page one of the chapter. We're not. What is vital for our work about this? Listen to this. Seemingly unimportant fact that the very presence of these unusually vivid memories is a definite indication that some accidental, momentary, unobstructed connection, I love that, has obviously occurred, although at present we may have no doubt about the cause or significance, but it's absolute evidence of the world of presence. How did it feel to listen? What was your feeling like when you heard these stories? Do you want to comment on that? Yeah. What did it feel like?
Well, to me, David, it felt like I was really accessing that person.
No. Hang on, Judy. Go ahead.
I think it's really nice to hear the experience and the memory of everybody, and it takes me back to where they were at that time, like, because obviously I have not been a part of any of their memories or part of the place where they have been, but this is just like a live telecast. I'm seeing you. I'm seeing them at that place doing that stuff.
Right.
And it's exciting because that is important to them, and that is why it is so prominent in their memory. And now it is important even to me.
Even to me.
So it's very exciting, and I'm sure everybody has such memories. Like, even I have, but right now, it might take a few moments for me to remember something like that, but I'm sure that the emotion was so strong for any of these people at that time that makes them remember this. It was a very important moment.
You have the invitation that if you do recall something by the end of the class, you're welcome to share it, okay? Good. So, each of us here, and I think everybody, hopefully everybody online as well, has had a vivid memory of this sort, an absolute vivid memory. And that's absolute evidence of the presence is operable at those times. Okay? So, I'm saying it like that. I'm saying it because it's like I'm putting the machine on notice at that time that there's a different sheriff in town, baby, and it happens, okay? It's not just the mechanicality of the mind all the time. There's this other thing, and let's give it its due. Let's give it its space to be. That's all I'm trying to say there, okay? And then a little ways down.
Here.
The very on the next column, the very last paragraph, starting with examining, which is what we've done. We've been examining those memories which are most vivid. We could make the important discovery that they always, without exception, occurred during just those moments when we were conscious. By the definition of the invocation into the present, of the presence of our presence, which is to say the deliberate invocation of that unique source of attention existing independently of the machine's automatic mechanical attention.
A beautiful sentence after that, one of my favorite qualifiers of this type of work. When you say you it would take you a few moments to maybe come across a memory, this is one of the hopeful pieces of information. These momentary moments of accidental presence are characterized by the corresponding presence of a very unique mood. Now, the next paragraph, David is going to give us some hints at, but when we use the word mood, we are using a very qualified, deliberate, specific meaning. We are not talking about atmosphere. It's not like you go out to dinner and you have a romantic mood because it's an Italian dinner and there's candles on the table. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about something that is specifically related to presence. This is a wonderful clue.
And I'm going to venture something here. This is what I was seeing when you were sharing, is that you were actually talking about a mood, this mood. My thing is, there's an objective mood that weaves every one of these experiences together. Even though I was a 9-year-old boy sitting in a pew in a church, it was the same mood as a 2-year-old child rushing up these stairs with this discovery, or discovering a mate that you find there in the airport, you know?
In a strange land.
In a strange land. And so there's a mood. So when you look, you have to look with different eyes, and that's the first hint at what this chapter heading means, that this emotion, the presence of memory. That's it's a higher emotion.
Mm-hmm.
And I know what Harry was talking about when he was at that special tree. I've never been to that tree, but I've been to that tree.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So we can celebrate each other in that manner, because there's a objective connectivity that we have with one to another.
Well, the objective connectivity is that among one another, not only is there presence of each, but there is presence of all.
That's right.
That's the mystery, and that's also the task.
We find each other there. We find each other there in these commonalities of that higher mood as such. And then the startling next paragraph is where EJ then offers us hope,
mm-hmm.
an interesting hope. Because before he's saying this accident of winding up at this airport, or this accident of, the Mississippi River.
Yeah.
The accident of the discovery of a butterfly, you know, these accidents occurred.
Yep.
And we can recall them as evidence of something. But then he goes on and he says something. He says, it is by the voluntary activation of this special mood that the corresponding state of presence can easily be invoked. There it is. We're done with the book. We're done, Harry.
Amen. Nicely said, David.
It's as if, I always have this thing, like I think God's sitting up there on the hill, he's saying, you know, free stuff, come and get it. And he's got pom-poms, and he goes, come on, here it is, it's great up here. All we have to do is just go up the hill, right?
Yeah.
Because he can't come down the hill too much further than he already has. But my gosh, he's put the hints in our life. Everybody has a hint. Have you had these vivid memories? I know you have. God.
Yeah.
Dan certainly has. So,
you know, this is another way of saying Buddha's necklace, if you think about
Buddha's
it.
Buddha's necklace, that's true,
right.
Yeah.
So we have the Buddha's
necklace.
Necklace.
We weave all these pearls of experience together.
Of
as a community, and we all share it.
We create it. So now, so then it, he says, but you have the chance now. You know how to get there, don't you? Don't you know how to get there?
What is that? Voluntary activation of this special.
And isn't it wonderful when you're there? Isn't that like a little paradise? Like, I mean, it is. And so we can get right back there.
Sure.
Voluntary activation.
Dan has.
And Dan has a question.
Some comments or whatever. Judy, you have a comment online you'd like to make verbal?
Oh, well, I wrote it in the chat box. It was back a few minutes ago. What happens when people are sharing? It's a kind of authentic connectedness, not the storytelling of personality. That was my sense of it, that there was an authentic connection that I felt when Harry was speaking.
About,
or when you were speaking of being a child in that pew, I mean, I could feel you. So it's not like we, you know, sit around and chat with people and say what happened, et cetera. Very, very different.
So we find ourselves in this space connecting with each other on that higher space, because that's where our friendship arises, and that's where our community builds upon those stepping stones that were given to us. These are gifts that were given to us. They were given to us as gifts to say, hey, guess what? You're a divine person. Just wanted to remind you about that, okay? And it's just like...
Yeah.
And
let me give you a little shake.
Just a little hint. You know, don't
shake
forget you're that. Kind of a divine person, okay? Here's the evidence. Then they say, you got to put the backpack on, and you got to start doing some work now, baby. Because you've been introduced, you've been initiated, and you got to read this posting by Bernice Plott.
Yeah.
This guy's amazing. You have already been initiated, because not only have you had those accidental vivid memories, but now we've recalled them together. We've recalled them together. So our job, you've been given, your purse is full, and you got to go work with it now. Do you remember the story of the talents, Harry, in the Bible?
But yes, I do.
We won't go into it right now, but I wanted to bring it up.
Yeah.
You've been given these gifts, and now... It's our turn, right?
Yep.
So, voluntary, and then it says, the continuing, moving ahead a little bit, the voluntary activation of these higher moods is the key to voluntary invocation of the various higher and lower consciousnesses. G added, then he left the table.
Yeah.
He's done that before. And then I just want to point out a couple of things in the next section called the presence exercise, which there's a whole bit that he starts with, but toward the end he goes, we all held our collective breath, but the little chair did not collapse as we had dreaded it might, and he launched himself into, listen to this, the first talk of the series, Practical Work on Self. We'll end on this, but it's so important. We tonight will make a new organization for work on self, he began, coughing slightly to clear his throat. Without a new organization, our work may not survive another generation. Then he says, I work in exile for my future family. I work in exile for my future family. I can see that family just emerging right now, and I meet them from time to time when I'm out there. And we can work together now for that future family. And we're creating objective beads on the on Buddha's necklace, and we can do it more effectively together. Right, Harry?
This is our hope.
This is our hope that we can do it together, and then we can share the what I believe to be, and Judy, we're going to have to get into this, but what I believe is a tangible substance that in emanation we give and share one with another. It's like we're going to communion, for all you Catholics that know what that's like, and the fear of that when you're a young child and you get the communion wafer and the presence that's around you because of it. Well, we can do that together, and we are doing it together. These are little communion wafers that we share one to another. Okay? So read ahead in the next bit here.
Yeah.
Now, because it starts with the presence exercise, and it goes on and goes the exercise.
Yeah, but the preliminary material that we've covered here tonight is one, acknowledgement and the definitive sense of what a vivid memory indicates. What does it mean when it shows there is presence that has accidentally been there? That's the clue to the first thing, is you got to recognize what you got. And then we have these other little clues that we've been throwing around a little bit here and there, sensing, of course, and also something about a particular type of mood. And then we get into the other aspect, which is the voluntary activation.
Right.
And for people who have some experience with a practice, any practice, it does not matter what it is, practice with the discipline of playing music or art or doing a meditation or whatever it is, a practice develops a certain form of strength and reliability. You know you can count on something because you've built it up. It's like a muscle. So when we get to this, the activation of voluntary activation of presence, we are basically talking about the same type of thing. We're just in a slightly different arena, but it's the same. Slightly different arena. It's your electrical force field, not your fingers on the keys.
These accidental vivid memories we have are signposts, so we know how to get back there. But we navigate. We don't navigate with this. We navigate with a form of a mood compass, and we find it. Like, in a certain way, if let's say Judy recalls that two-year-old girl, she can find the mood associated with that right now. Mm-hmm. So we can find the mood and go, oh yeah, that's right. And that's the way we can begin our work.
I think somebody had something to
say. Did you say, were you going to say something, Harry?
No.
Okay. So on Friday, which is 2 days from today, at 11 o'clock, my daughter comes into the Sacramento airport. I'm going to pick her up, and we're going to head towards Portland to see Athena. And we're going to stop in Ashland and watch, I have a play there. Who's taking a play?
Shakespearean play.
And we're going to, basically it's a road trip for about a week. We head back on Wednesday, but I seriously doubt I'll make it here by 7 p.m.
You want to call in?
I might.
Okay.
I might. I know the number.
Oh,
so
good.
But are you going to be here, Ivan? Excellent.
Good.
And then are you okay with that then?
I'm totally fine with that. And Harry and Judy, are you guys up next week for being on?
Yes.
It depends. I certainly will try. I don't know where the boat is going to be at sea.
I know.
Judy, we need your help then, okay, on Wednesday.
Yeah, I can be here Wednesday.
Thank you.
Thank you. So let's see what we discover with this vivid memory exercise. If you're moved to do it,
please
go ahead and put some notations on the Facebook page.
Record.
Because other people get to go, oh, that's what they mean.
Mm-hmm.
What page are you talking about, David, if I may ask?
This is on Facebook. Are you on Facebook at all?
Oh, no, I'm not. No, sir.
I would doubt that you're on Facebook.
We're going to help you get there.
Judy's on there.
We're going to help you get there, Harry. Have no fear.
I learned
it. Okay, I am friendly when you mention
Facebook.
It.
We're going to get you past your fear and right onto Facebook with no difficulties at all.
I learned a great deal when I helped Harry get into Second Life in the ashram.
Yeah.
I learned an enormous amount about patience and expansion.
Yes, you did.
You learned also what you know.
I really appreciate the opportunity here.
And I'm eternally grateful, David.
I just got on Facebook two weeks ago, so I can say you can do it without any fear. I had a very good teacher, and I'm going to tell her to call you.
Oh, okay.
So he's gone for about a week here.
We're going to take care of it.
Got a great adventure ahead of him. So that's about it for tonight. What an experience, and I really appreciate everybody coming, and we'll look forward to seeing you next Wednesday at 7 o'clock.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.